This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Wesley Smith, who knows an awful lot about biotechnology, and he's going to talk to us about Proposition 71 here in California. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you.
Why don't we start by talking about John Kerry and an article you wrote about him recently on the subject of human cloning. Why don't we tell people who either don't know anything about it or who know so much about it they're starting to get confused, what is human cloning?
Human cloning is also known as somatic cell nuclear transfer, and that's where you take a human egg, take out the nucleus, take a nucleus out of, say, a human skin cell, put that where the human egg nucleus used to be, jolt it with electricity, and if it works, a new embryo is created, a new human organism, a new human life. At that point, all cloning is completed, and then the decision is, what do we do with this new human life that has been created?
Okay, now somatic,
let me just finish this point. Somatic cell nuclear transfer is the procedure that was used to make Dolly the sheep.
Right. Now, some people distinguish between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning. And that's kind of like talking about lunch cooking and supper cooking. You make the meal, and depending on what you're doing with it, you're redefining it, or what?
Well, it's something of a misnomer. Cloning is cloning is cloning, and what that those two distinctions try to make is that there is a different potential use for the cloned embryo you have created.
Right.
If you're going to use it for research or to try to extract stem cells, it's called therapeutic cloning generally. And if you're going to try to make a cloned human baby, it's called reproductive cloning. But
okay.
The cloning act itself,
right,
what is the consequence of engaging in that cloning act, is the same in either case.
Since cloning originally it was a term from botany, really, what it means is the creation of an identical an asexually reproduced individual. Is that sort of what it means?
More or less, yeah. There are now two ways to create mammalian life, and humans, of course, are mammals.
Right.
One is sexually, which is fertilization, sperm meets egg, and the second is asexually, which is through somatic cell nuclear transfer, and there might be some other forms of cloning procedures that could also occur. But that's basically what we're talking about. It is important to note, however, that there is an identical twin is nature's actual clone.
Right.
But even identical twins come out of the womb with different fingerprints. So there are no two human lives that are exactly identical. And in somatic cell nuclear transfer, the egg provides about 1% of the mitochondrial DNA. So even a clone is not a real clone. It is a near a virtual identical twin, not an actual identical twin.
Right. And to sort of focus on the biology for a second, because it's so less controversial than the politics, the reason this can work is that the egg is a particularly special cell that's able to turn itself into an embryo once it has a full complement of DNA, once it has all
46 chromosomes.
The 46 chromosomes. Once it has both sides of the equation. And normally, the sperm brings in the other half of that, and that excites the egg to such a point that it becomes an embryo. But in cloning, the full complement of genetic material comes in from the donor cell, the cell that's the somatic cell, who's having its nucleus transferred into the egg.
Correct.
And then when that plus a little bit of electricity, which strangely enough is what they got used to get Frankenstein going in the movie, a bigger jolt. Sort of fools the egg into thinking it's ready to go now and turn itself into an embryo. Is that sort of what happens?
Well, I would say that's what happens. I'm not a biologist, but
right.
that's pretty much what I've understood in my reading about these issues. There is a problem, though, that cloned mammals are almost all defective, and that has to do with apparently imprinting. You know, in a fertilized embryo, you've got a full half of all chromosomes from each side, father and mother. And then the imprinting issue is which of these is going to be the gene that controls certain functions.
Right.
And in cloning, apparently, there are imprinting problems, which can cause very severe difficulties, birth defects, miscarriages, and even, in some cases, the killing of the birth mother, because the fetus grows so large or the placenta grows so large, it kills the birth mother.
In fact, well, neither of us are biologists. It could be, if I could speculate there, that sort of the freshly imprinted genetic complement is what evolution asks for in order to create an embryo, and when you sort of bring it in pre-arranged, something is missing there somehow on some subtle level.
You're taking two broken cells,
right,
and you're putting them together and fusing them and hoping to get a good result, and that's not easy to do.
Right. Oh, no, that's what you're doing in normal reproduction.
No, well, in cloning,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Breaking
in cloning.
You're breaking an egg.
Right.
And you're breaking a somatic cell,
right,
and you're then taking the nucleus from the somatic cell into the broken egg and trying to make it better again. It might be just
right,
like Humpty Dumpty, you know?
Right, exactly. Humpty Dumpty comes up. That's a great transition, because Humpty Dumpty, among other things, said, when I use a word, it means precisely what I intend it to mean. It's a question of power, nothing more, nothing less.
Yes.
You quote Dianne Feinstein, one of California's two U.S. senators and a woman who just recently endorsed Proposition 71. And I don't know, one of us could read what she had to say. First, did she really say this?
Well, she on the Senate floor, she called the cloned embryo an unfertilized egg.
Right, and we've just made it clear that that's not what it is.
Right, and then she said that, you know, the beauty of her legislation, I don't have the quote in front of me, but the beauty of her legislation is that an unfertilized egg would have to be destroyed after the primitive streak develops, which is the beginning of the neural tissues in an embryo. And, of course, a clone creates an embryo.
Right.
And what many pro-cloning people want to pretend does not exist is that very fact. It's almost like they don't have the courage of their convictions, and they're not respecting the American people, and certainly with regard to Proposition 71, which would create a constitutional right to engage in human cloning for biomedical research, they're not respecting the California people, because whether or not we should do this is not only a science issue, it's a moral issue. And to pretend that a new human organism is not created, as Senator Feinstein did in that speech on the Senate floor, is to disrespect Californians and try to inhibit them from coming up with proper moral judgments based on accurate scientific and biological facts.
Well, now, is it that they don't have the courage of their convictions, or they completely have the courage of their convictions and they just don't want to tell people what they're up to?
It could be either one. In fact, obfuscation is a major problem that I find that many in the pro-biotech cult, it's becoming, it seems to me, are engaged in, because there is a tremendous amount of smoke being blown to prevent people just from knowing the basic biology.
Now, this would seem to be, let's be gentle about it and call it inconsistency, because I understand that the essence of the scientific enterprise is openness in the search for truth.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've been noticing in a lot of this debate is that science is corrupting itself to win a political argument. There's a tremendous amount of pressure being applied, from what I'm hearing, on scientists to toe the party line on these issues. Secondly, science is supposed to be objective and present facts. Now, of course, scientists can have subjective beliefs, as anybody else can. But in their scientific work, what they should do is present the actual facts and let the political chips fall where they may. But increasingly, we're beginning to see reports of science journals editing their findings in order to come up with a certain conclusion to affect the political debate. You've seen the New England Journal of Medicine, of all places, have biologically inaccurate statements in order to affect the political debate. In fact, the New England Journal of Medicine has explicitly said that to promote embryonic stem cell research and therapeutic cloning, it will be looking for specific articles for publication. In other words, they're looking for a political purpose to publish, not just the objective medicine. And that is a potential to destroy the incredibly good reputation that the New England Journal of Medicine has earned over the years. It reminds me of the old statement from the Vietnam War days that we destroyed the village in order to save it. Many scientists, it seems to me, are so adamant that they win this political debate over human cloning and embryonic stem cell research that they're willing to corrupt science in order to win that debate. And I think in the end it's going to hurt science more than help it.
Is the debate about stem cell research and the enterprise of stem cell research so central to the ongoing financial success of the scientific enterprise that people are willing to do what you just said?
You know, I don't think so. You know, this is very strange. First of all, you know, when we talk about human cloning and embryonic stem cell research, we're talking about a very small portion of the biotech sector. Biotech is huge, and quite a bit of what it does is not controversial from my perspective, although some environmentalists, for example, don't like the idea of genetically altering animals or genetically altering plants.
Right.
But I'm not involved in those issues. The private sector has generally kept pretty far away from the companies that want to engage in human therapeutic cloning and human embryonic stem cell research. And I don't think it's because of moral qualms. I think they've looked at all of the problems that exist before these technologies could ever become viable products in terms of medical treatments, in which case a lot of money could be made. And in doing their due diligence, they realized that this is so impractical that the chances are it's never going to actually work as a commonplace treatment in the clinic. But they are funding adult stem cell research, which is showing tremendous potential. It is already in early human trials for heart conditions, for example. It's had some human trials for Parkinson's and so forth early, and we can't say what the conclusion will be. But the adult stem cell and related adult tissues for use in regenerative medicine are moving forward at a tremendous pace. They are getting private investment. And so what you see is the science community going to Plan B. Since they can't get private money, they're trying to get the taxpayers to pay for human cloning. And particularly with Proposition 71, they're trying to get the taxpayers to borrow $3 billion over 10 years. And when you include interest, that comes up to $6 billion, according to the legislative analyst, to engage in morally problematic and speculative research that may never actually end up in the clinic because it's so impractical, expensive, and unlikely.
Well, the word boondoggle does come to mind.
It's a incredible, audacious money grab. It's corporate welfare at its most extreme.
And
this is a state, California, right now, is in a budget crisis of unprecedented proportions. Our children are being kicked out of health care, our poor children. We're having our developmentally disabled people have services cut in their multipurpose centers. Senior citizen issues are being cut and services are being cut. Our roads can't be repaired. Our bridge tolls are going up here in the Bay Area to $4 and $5, and we're supposed to borrow billions of dollars to give to rich Stanford University and Geron and other biotech companies? This is ludicrous. And if the people of California see it for what it is, it will lose in a runaway. But what you're going to see instead is this incredible push in the last month of the campaign of cures, and we'll see whether the California people will buy it. But if they do, and San Francisco falls because of the big earthquake, because it's a constitutional amendment, those biotech scientists will get $295 million of borrowed money every single year, no matter what the state of the California economy.
Or the state of the research.
Exactly.
Okay. It's my understanding that Prop 71 has $12 million in the bank. It, about a week or so ago, it got $400,000 from noted philanthropist Bill Gates.
And by the way,
yes,
Bill Gates could more easily afford to pay the $3 billion over 10 years than the state of California could. Bill Gates could write a check for that, and yet he is going to put $400,000 into inducing us to borrow money that he won't pay himself.
This shouldn't be much of a surprise. Didn't Paul Allen pay for an initiative in Washington to pay for a stadium for his team?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, Bill Gates and other rich industrialists want taxpayers to rush in where they fear to tread, because they know there's no real money coming from this research in the near term, because there's going to be such difficulty in getting these products to market. Just for example, embryonic stem cells cause tumors in animals, so they can't be used in people right now. They could be rejected, which is why a lot of people say, well, the answer to that is creating human clones and then taking the stem cells from those embryos. And by the way, embryonic stem cells do not appear to be immortal. Remember, the big issue was, oh, once you create this embryonic stem cell line, you can keep it in culture forever and ever. Well, now they're finding that over time, embryonic stem cell lines develop chromosomal abnormalities, and this has been reported in the New England Journal of Medicine, abnormalities that you see in cancers. So the idea that this is all going to somehow create miracle medical cures in the near term is ludicrous. Beyond that, how are you going to ever engage in all of this human cloning so that people can have ready access to this technology? The key ingredient, as we discussed earlier in this discussion, to human cloning, to somatic cell nuclear transfer, is human eggs. If we're going to treat millions and millions of patients who have degenerative conditions with cloning, you're going to need millions and millions and millions of human eggs, and they don't exist because they're very difficult to obtain. Right now, college kids, girls of childbearing age, sell their eggs for about $1,000 a piece. Can you imagine what the price will be if the demand shoots up for therapeutic cloning? And right now, we're talking about getting eggs for in vitro fertilization. If you have millions of people who want to be cloned for regenerative medicine, the price of eggs would go through the roof. And you're just never going to have enough eggs, and the cost would be cost prohibitive. So what this ends up becoming, if it can be done, which is a very big if, is rich man's medicine on the back of poor women, because what's going to happen is these biotech companies are going to go to Africa and to Asia and South America, and they're going to pay women $500 or $1,000 to go through this very rigorous hyperovulation to obtain eggs, in which case, if there's any medical complications, they might not even have access to medical care. That's why a lot of feminists, by the way, oppose human cloning, because they see it as a way to oppress poor women.
So this, in fact, would be something like going to India and paying people who are poor for their kidneys.
Exactly.
And of course, it would be justified on the grounds that, oh, they have plenty of eggs. Half their kidneys, we're taking away a few of their eggs.
Exactly. And even then, you're not going to have nearly enough eggs in order to do this widespread therapeutic cloning. So the only people that would be able to afford therapeutic cloning, and if it could even be developed as a medical treatment, would be Bill Gates.
Right.
Or it would be very hyper-rationed to the very few. And what people with diseases now and their families are being told is that this could be available for the many, and it's not true. I don't know any way out of that egg problem except for the following. You could use animal eggs, I suppose, but then you're creating human-animal hybrids.
Paging Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, and we don't know what's going to happen in terms of the rejection issue. Secondly, we could take embryonic stem cells and morph them into eggs, but that's been done with mice, but they're nowhere near to being able to do it in humans. Plus, even if you were able to do that, then you have to learn how to mature the eggs. Or you can take them from aborted female fetuses, but then you still have the problem of maturing the eggs. And now you have an issue of whether or not we should do partial birth abortion because we need an intact female ovaries. I mean, they're already doing that in Israel and the Netherlands to provide eggs for in vitro fertilization clinics. That shows you how shortage we have of eggs. It's become a very rare and precious natural resource. And if cloning comes in, it'll just become an incredibly expensive one and even more rare and unusual. There was a report in the National Academy of Sciences that this researcher named Momberts at Rockefeller University, they expect it to take 100 eggs just to get one embryonic stem cell line per patient. There's no way you're going to come up with all these.
So given all of these difficulties, how would you expect, assuming this passes, for the scientists involved here to proceed?
Well, I think they're going to proceed with the research, and they're going to get the grants. And it should be noted that in Proposition 71, the priority must be given to those areas of research that are not paid for by the federal government or in which there are restrictions. It's quite explicit.
Okay, say a little bit about them biologically, about adult stem cells and about cord blood stem cells.
Stem cells are merely a generic term for a cell that has not differentiated. That
right.
is, it has not become one of the more than 200 tissue types that we have in our body.
Or it has. There are specific stem cells for blood or nerve.
You find stem cells in embryos, which we all know about.
Right.
But you also find them in human blood, in human bone marrow. You find them in human brains. They have found them in human fat. They've even found them in teeth pulp. And by the way, not all adult regenerative medicine is necessarily being done with stem cells. For example, human spleen cells have cured juvenile diabetes in mice, cured it. And those spleen cells became islet cells in the mice pancreas that produced insulin. These mice were cured with human adult spleen cells.
Although presumably it's not as easy to do it the other way around. You use mice spleen cells to cure
human
diabetes.
No, you couldn't, and again you have the rejection issue.
Right.
But the point is, we don't have to just use stem cells. There are also adult tissues such as olfactory tissues, which have been used by Dr. Carlos Lima in Lisbon, Portugal, to treat people with spinal cord injury. Quadriplegics have regained feeling in their muscles, they've regained bladder control, and there was testimony before a Senate subcommittee of a woman who had been treated with her own olfactory tissues, which are very rich in nerves, and she'd been a quadriplegic from a nerve injury, from a spinal cord injury, and she showed pictures of herself walking with braces. This is huge.
Now, in fact, this kind of adult stem cell research is neither illegal nor unfunded by the federal government,
right?
It is
funded $200 million a year by the federal government, and the federal government funds embryonic stem cell research at about $25 million per year right now.
And that's on those lines that have been created as of a certain date of
as
a few
of
years
August
ago.
9th, 2001.
Right.
And what Proposition 71 says is that priority in terms of the money we'll be borrowing if it passes to pay researchers to conduct this research has to be given to those areas that are inadequately funded according to the people who will run this new regenerative medical institute
right. That
would be set up, or which there are too many policy blocking procedures. Now, the federal government does not fund cloning at all.
Right.
So that would give the first priority under Proposition 71. And also, there are policy limitations in the Bush policy that limits federal funding on embryonic stem cell lines and creation as of August 9th, 2001. So if Proposition 71 passes, priority has to be given in the Constitution to those sources of research, even if the adult stem cells work faster. Now, there is a mechanism where if two-thirds of the institute decide to fund adult stem cell research, they technically could, but this is not being set up to do adult stem cell research.
So the focus is very clearly in the language of the initiative
to
focus it on embryonic stem cell research.
But they do it in an obfuscatory way. They don't call embryonic stem cells embryonic stem cells.
What do
they call them? Pluripotent cells.
Okay.
And they don't call therapeutic cloning cloning. They call it SCNT. Yet they call reproductive cloning cloning to make a pretend that there's a difference between the cloning procedure for medical research and the cloning procedure for reproduction. Yet the South Korean scientists, and it's only happened once so far, who created the only human embryos that have ever reached the stage where you could get embryonic stem cells, that also is the stage you can implant in a woman's womb, and he said that his discovery and his technology could be used to create a clone baby as well as being used in research. So that isn't made clear in the initiative either.
Okay,
the initiative is really clouded with language to make it so people do not understand it.
Okay. Let's look at Proposition 71 in a larger context, in a global context. The in addition to all the cures that are being promised, the promise is being made that the California economy will receive, I think their language is, thousands of new high-paying jobs.
Well, this is crazy, because even this is obviously designed to attract bio companies to come to California.
Right.
But if these jobs are being created with biotech companies that come to California, that's going to be done with money the California people are borrowing to pay this institute, to pay these companies. So all of these people will be paid with borrowed money. It's like paying your credit card bill with other credit card bills.
Well, that's
you're really not creating new wealth. You're just spreading borrowed money around.
Well, but the premise is, as I understand it, is that once these breakthrough discoveries are made that will lead to breakthrough treatments, that will lead to vast influxes of money, which you've done plenty to deflate that idea already, then California will be flourishing and prospering, and people will be selling real estate and everything.
If people believe that, I've got an orange bridge in the middle of San Francisco Bay, I'll sell them.
Right.
Because if this was going to be so lucrative, you'd have to beat the private investor away with a stick.
Right.
But the private investor is avoiding this technology like the plague because they don't want to lose their own money. And so, but it's also a political correct issue, you know, where you have to show how progressive you are to support this. And so you see people like Bill Gates and some other rich Hollywood types funding it, but they won't fund the research out of their own money. They'll fund a political campaign to get us to borrow the money to do what they won't do with their own money because they know that it'll probably be lost if they do.
Well, if the whole media weren't controlled by the liberal establishment, this would be obvious to everyone by now, wouldn't it?
Well, what's striking to me is that a lot of media that first off decries the power of money in politics then kind of gushes about all the money that has been created and collected for this initiative. Secondly, a lot of the good government rules that media really support can be circumvented in this initiative. And for some reason, I haven't seen a whole lot of critical writing or reportage about that issue. At the same time, it has to be said that not a lot has been written about this issue.
No. I'm working as hard as I can.
The proposition people are, the supporters, are keeping this as below the radar as they can because they don't want, in my view, extensive analysis. And so they're not doing a lot of publicity at this point, and then I think they're going to come out with a barrage of television ads. And of course, the opposition is woefully underfunded because we don't have people like Bill Gates writing $400,000 checks.
Okay, I want to talk about that in a second, but let me back up about the question about the California's competitive position should any of this succeed, or if it succeeds, or
right.
arguing that it will succeed. Presumably, there are Koreans and Dutch and Europeans and Asians and Chinese and all
sure.
kinds of people who are working on the same issues and who may, through brilliance or judiciously applied funding, solve these problems such as they are faster, more efficiently than even the Californians. And
well,
what happens then exactly?
Well, it's very unclear. What you have here are a lot of different sovereign entities that seem to be getting into a Oklahoma land rush situation where they're all racing to attract the biotech industry to their borders.
Right.
New Jersey passed a law that allows somatic cell nuclear transfer, human cloning, implantation, and gestation through the ninth month. Now, that is a wild license so that big biotech can do whatever they want, basically, with cloned human life except bring it to birth. That was designed to attract biotech companies to New Jersey. Plus, they're doing a few million dollars, $6 million, I think, in state funding of that. That was the idea, was to attract biotech companies to New
so
Jersey.
So this is kind of an up.
So California is trying
and
to
up,
trump that with
right.
this multi-billion-dollar loan scheme. And if that passes, who's to say that Illinois might not trump that by doing something else, by offering grants to these? You know what I'm saying?
So those poor scientists will have to be on wheels and roll around to the state with the best deal.
And then you've got, and plus the international issues also.
Right.
California, you know, whatever one thinks of the morality of this research, fiscally and politically, this is a debacle. We are broke. We are tens of billions in debt. And we're going to borrow money and borrow tomorrow's future and for research that may or may not pan out.
Okay, let's address the argument that's made by the proponents, though, that's most directly directed to that point.
Yeah.
Don't you want a cure for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and diabetes?
Well, certainly I do, but first off, stem cell research is not going to be a cure for Alzheimer's. It's become very clear. Alzheimer's is not a cellular disease, it's a whole brain disease. In fact, there was a expose in the Washington Post in which a stem cell researcher actually defended not correcting the record, because they know that Alzheimer's is not going to be cured with embryonic stem cell research. He said people need to believe in a fairy tale. That is a quote on the record in the Washington Post. This is part of the obfuscation and disingenuous advocacy that's going on in the science community, which is so corrupting of science.
So, in fact, in other contexts, this has been called the big lie.
Well, let's put it this way. They're not correcting an intentional misimpression left by some people.
Right.
Now, of course, we all want cures for these issues. If we're going to have treatments, the sooner treatments are most likely to come from non-embryonic sources because they're already in early human trials. They don't have the rejection issue that embryonic stem cell research would have. They don't have the tumor issue, apparently, that embryonic stem cell research has. They certainly don't have the moral baggage of creating human life for the purpose of destroying it and reducing the status of human life to a mere commodity equivalent to a soybean crop.
Have moral or ethical or religious arguments been raised against using adult stem cells by anyone?
What would the moral problem be? It would be like faking my own blood
right.
and preparing it ahead of time for use in my own surgery.
There are religious groups, small though they may be, that view any kind of medical intervention as irreligious.
Well, all right. You know, there are
Christian
people
scientists.
Who don't believe that
right.
people should get medical treatment.
Right.
But taking that aside,
right.
Using your own body tissues to treat yourself.
No,
but
nobody really
getting your own stem cells to do what they do naturally and giving
right.
them a boost
right.
Is certainly not a moral issue for almost everybody.
So given what you've said, that there are no real ethical or moral obstacles to adult stem cell therapy, that it's proven itself so far to be more effective than embryonic stem research, what's driving this initiative and the whole embryonic stem cell research movement?
Well, let's be careful not to overstate it.
Okay.
The adult stem cell has advanced further in research than the embryonic.
Okay.
and looks to me, as I look at the Science Journal reports, to be more hopeful.
All right.
But so let's not overstate we're not yet ready to say that it's going to work.
Then making the counterargument, if that's because embryonic stem cell research hasn't seen enough money to be on a par with adult stem cell research, wouldn't it make sense to give it some more money?
Well, I don't think so, because you've got too many problems to overcome. And if we're so close on the adult, or much closer, why not see if that happens? Because if our goal is to find treatments, effective treatments, in the soonest possible time, that seems to me to be the approach that would work the best. But that whatever one might think in terms of the morality of embryonic stem cell research and therapeutic cloning, I'm really opposed to cloning, because that is the biotechnology that can lead to tremendous difficulties in the future. It can lead to clone babies. It can lead to genetic engineering. It can lead to people trying to create post-humans and to create human-animal hybrids, which are being talked about in bioethics and in futurists and among futurists and so forth. If we keep a line where human cloning is outlawed, we can still have tremendous advance in medical research using adult tissues, without crossing bad moral lines. But again, with Proposition 71, one need not oppose embryonic stem cell research or therapeutic cloning to think this is ludicrous.
Right.
Because you're robbing today's children from health care they need and robbing today's state needs in order to support a rich biotech industry and rich universities for research that is highly speculative, not to mention morally problematic.
So, in fact, if you think it's morally wrong, you should be against it. But even if you think it's morally neutral or morally right, you ought to consider the financial arrangements and see it as a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. How come California should bear this burden? California can't afford it. It is immoral, in my view, to take money away from people who need it today, who need essential state services, in order to fund this thing, which they say, well, not a problem because we don't have to pay any money back for 5 years. But that interest is building up, and if you take a look at the projections, our financial crisis is not even going to be anywhere near over in 5 years. In fact, it may be at its nadir in 5 years, at its worst.
Now, just for the record, could you make the ethical argument, the religious argument, and any other arguments you want to make against those outgrowths of embryonic stem cell research that you just mentioned, including transhumans and human animal clones and so on?
Yeah, for me,
hybrids.
For me, I find embryonic stem cell research highly problematic, because you are treating a human embryo. If you're using an IVF embryo, we'll say.
Right. In vitro fertilization.
That embryo was not created to be a harvestable crop. It was created to bring a new baby in the world. And the fact that it happens to be an excess embryo that is no longer probably needed and may be destroyed anyway doesn't mean that we should somehow switch our focus on human life away from being a subject, that is something, even a nascent human life as a subject, to a mere object, a mere natural resource.
I want to focus on that. That's the crux of the whole matter. What you just called nascent human life, some other people call blastocysts.
A blastocyst is a scientific term for an embryo that's been developed for 1 week.
Right.
Some people say, this isn't an embryo, it's a blastocyst.
Right.
Which, of course, is nonsensical, because an embryo is a blastocyst is an embryo. A zygote is an embryo. The embryo goes through various phases that are given different names, but it's all a continuum.
Is a fertilized egg an embryo?
Once it's fertilized, it's a zygote. It becomes a one-celled embryo, yeah.
A one-celled embryo.
Once that process is completed,
so
that's called a zygote.
This is another way of saying human life begins at conception.
Well, biologically, it does.
Right.
Now, for some now people say, well, no, it doesn't. Biologically, it does. There's no other way to... In fact, in my new book, Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World, I quote embryology textbooks, which are not taking political positions, to, you know, once that fertilization process is complete, a new unique human organism with its own genetic makeup and sex is in existence, and it will never be another one exactly like it. Now, does that matter morally is not a scientific issue, that's a moral and ethical issue.
Right. So, but scientifically,
human life begins at conception. There's no way to say it doesn't.
And you'd like everyone to at least agree on what we're calling things.
Well, yeah, we have to agree that that's true, and then we have to find out whether or not that matters morally, and if it does or it doesn't, then people have to make their arguments.
Right, so people...
I submit that it does.
People...
Because
go ahead.
Because if... I submit that the most important question facing us in the 21st century is whether human life has intrinsic value simply and merely because it is human. If the answer to that question is yes, which I think it should be, then we're going to be able to approach these biotech issues with a proper respect for the intrinsic value of all human life, not just people who are born, but also nascent human life, because it's human. And that has to impact how we also treat born people, which I don't have time to get into, but the case I make in my book. Because there are people who are saying, for example, that people who are diagnosed in a permanent coma aren't human life either, based on consciousness and so forth. And so we're getting to the place where we're beginning to look at certain aspects of the human continuum, whether it's a nascent human life, a fetus or an embryo, or whether it's somebody with a severe brain injury, and we're saying, well, they're not really human because they don't have sufficient consciousness. But once we start saying that you're not human and you're not human, or your humanity doesn't matter, or your humanity doesn't matter, then we're in a position of saying that the question I pose should be answered no. That human life does not have intrinsic value simply because it's human, at which point the value of human life ceases to be something based on objective existence and becomes a matter of political power. Those who have the power to decide what constitutes moral value then make those decisions. And at that point, people who are particularly people with severe disabilities become less safe, because the very reasons we say nascent human life shouldn't be valued, for example, that it's not conscious or that it's it isn't self-aware over time, can also be said about people with Alzheimer's disease, or can be said about people in comas.
It's this particular chain of discussion that leads to letting many people kill girl fetuses in India.
Well, you have, and you have, that's right, you have in India and in China, they've said that, well, being human isn't what matters is that you're male human.
Right.
And so there's been a hyper abortion rate in India for girls and in China, so that the whole natural balance of between the sexes has been thrown completely out of whack.
And what if they find
in terms of doing genetic research that homosexuality is a genetic cause, and people are able to determine ahead of time whether their embryo or fetus is going to be gay? Are we going to say that those babies should be destroyed because they're going to be gay?
Or the converse.
Oh, exactly. We have to learn that, it seems to me, to value human life, including nascent human life. And this issue is really crucial to that, because it's easy to say that, well, an embryo doesn't matter. Well, if it doesn't matter, then we set ourselves on a path that says that human life is subjective, not objective.
And then
to turn it into a mere corn crop, say that we can, when we get into therapeutic cloning, create human life that must be destroyed. Now, that's radical. The idea in therapeutic cloning that Dianne Feinstein supports is that we should be able to create cloned human life and require it to be destroyed legally, say, at the 14th day.
As a way of avoiding the moral the moral difficulty of letting it live.
Right. Well, and that's exactly what they're doing, and because politically they're saying, well, this way you can be assured there won't be any cloned babies. Well, that 14-day limit isn't going to stick, because it turns out that some of the best embryonic stem cell research, or embryonic stem cells, may be at 8 weeks,
right,
rather than in the first week. And what if we decide that really the best way to, for example, get kidneys is from cloned fetuses of ourselves, wherein we not only do we create human embryos, but we implant them and gestate them until the cloned fetus has a kidney, and then we abort and take that kidney and transplant it into the donor.
Are you saying, is it possible that the model that we've got here of billionaires and other powerful organizations organizing to persuade people that it's in their interest economically and medically to do this kind of research could reassemble themselves or follow on with the kind of, you want to grow a kidney? Policies and further policies in those directions?
What New Jersey legalized is fetal farming,
right,
through cloning. They have allowed cloned embryos to be made as a matter of law. They do not outlaw implanting those cloned embryos in wombs, and they only require those cloned embryos to be destroyed after birth, meaning when the law specifically says at the point of becoming a newborn individual. That means they can clone and abort if they choose to. And one of the
it sounds like they can allow them to give birth, take out the kidney, and kill them.
I would say no, because at that point, I mean, there are some people who have argued that, but I would say that at that point, the murder statutes would kick in.
Okay.
But let's say they can certainly, under the law, they can destroy the fetuses just before the moment of birth under
right.
this law. Now, one of the things that might be done is an experiment that has already been done by Advanced Cell Technology in this country with cows.
That's the name of a company.
Yes, of Worcester, Massachusetts.
Right.
And they're one of the big therapeutic human cloning companies that wants to push therapeutic cloning. They took a cow and they made a cow embryo using somatic cell nuclear transfer. They then took that embryo and implanted it in a cow, let it develop to the early fetal stage, aborted it, took the primordial kidneys, did a skin graft of that kidney onto the cow whose DNA was used to create the clone to see whether it would be rejected. It was not rejected, and it created a little urine. There were headlines saying therapeutic cloning works. Now, this wasn't therapeutic cloning as we've been led to understand what it's supposed to be, which is using embryonic stem cells from cloned embryos. This was actually fetal organ farming. Now, a lot of biotech companies say we're not really interested in doing that with people, but if you did want to do that with people, it would be legal in New Jersey today.
I'm going to go talk to the people in New Jersey sometime this week. So let me wrap this up and sort of summarize it, that these sort of larger issues we've been talking about what constitutes the human and what rights humans have, and what resolves itself through Proposition 71, that those issues are at stake here. Is that
yes,
what you're saying?
Because in Proposition 71, there is a constitutional right under the state constitution to create human life for the purpose of destroying it. That is somatic cell nuclear transfer. And that is a radical notion, that there could be one category of human life, even though it's unborn life, that must be destroyed. Not that can be destroyed as an abortion in terms of choice, but which must be destroyed. It also permits using IVF embryos as corn, as you know, harvested corn, as opposed to being a entity that was created for the purpose of being born.
What about the argument that what good does it do more good? Or, I don't want to answer the question, but I'll let you. What would be the purpose in destroying the excess embryos that have been created in a IVF procedure that the couple decides it's got enough children now and it doesn't need them anymore?
Well, I suppose the point is not to have to pay for the storage because
right.
they're put in deep freeze. It's interesting, there is a organization called Operation Snowflake that is actually promoting the adoption of these frozen embryos.
Right.
So that rather than being thrown out, they will be implanted in women who adopt, and with their tend to be their couples, but the
right.
women get implanted, and there have been about 50 babies born now from these frozen embryos that would have otherwise been thrown out.
Pre-birth adoptions.
Pre-birth adoption. Some people don't like the term adoption because it connotates that the embryo has a moral value, and they
right.
want it to be called donation.
Right.
So that, you know, certainly the 400,000 embryos that are frozen in this country are not all, can certainly be adopted. But they aren't necessarily every single one going to be destroyed. A different issue that I don't get into is why are we making so many excess embryos?
Right.
And whether or not this should be regulated. But that's, you know,
that's
beyond
another
my
story
pay grade.
For
I'm just
right.
trying to deal here with whether or not we should turn human life from a subject into an object, into something that is believed to be at least potentially a human baby, into something that is actually being reduced to a mere natural resource.
Okay, and focus on why the vote on Proposition 71 calls that issue into question.
Because Proposition 71 explicitly creates a legal right to engage in human cloning, that is creating new human lives through asexual means, somatic cell nuclear transfer, that must be destroyed
okay.
and are to be used in research and not to be used to be brought to birth. That is as radical a notion as anything we've ever seen in this world, it seems to me. I don't know of any law ever created that requires certain categories of human life to be destroyed.
And that's, in a sense, to live up to Dianne Feinstein's promise that no embryo left behind, no embryo will be allowed to be
born.
Well,
but she calls them unfertilized eggs. She's
right.
Not willing to admit that they're actually human life.
Right.
And see, that's why, in order to have a proper moral debate, we have to have the scientific facts presented objectively and accurately, and then we can grapple and ponder with these very serious moral and ethical questions. What people like Dianne Feinstein and others are trying to do when they use language that, for example, calls a cloned embryo an unfertilized egg, what they're trying to do is prevent us from having that debate.
Okay, we're going to try to have it here on California Politics Today. Maybe you can come back sometime if I can drag someone out of the lab there to talk on behalf of Proposition 71. We can have you both argue about
this.
Let's
do it.
Final point. In 1932, Aldous Huxley, we're going to end this interview with the way Aldous Huxley in 1932 began his dystopian novel Brave New World. It said, Chapter 1, a squat gray building of only 34 stories. Over the main entrance, the words Central London Hatchery and Conditioning Center, and in a shield, the World State's motto, Community, Identity, Stability. That was Brave New World. You've got a book called Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. What's the relationship? Say something about your book before you go.
Yeah, the book is going to deal with all of these issues, human cloning, embryonic stem cell research, genetic engineering, and what they mean, what the science is accurately, it explains what is going on, and also where I think that the moral and ethical arguments should take us, and what we should say yes to and what we should say no to.
All right. Thank you for talking to us on California Politics today, and we'll be talking more, I hope, in the next 2 months as this issue comes before the voters of California.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.